is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, October 11, 2019. I'm Buster Olney, Troy Farkas, producing back in Bristol. And Troy, today I'm trying to do this podcast from the world's busiest airport in Atlanta as I make my way down to Houston for the American League Championship Series. So this is kind of a baggage claim Friday, as we might say.
Interesting. I think that's a great trivia question. If you ask what is the busiest airport in the world, I don't think the common answer would be Atlanta.
No, but it is. Have you been through the Atlanta airport?
I have, but I was a very small child. I was going to a Braves game, and there was a big Scooby-Doo mascot, and I saw him, and I cried.
You're kidding.
No.
Scooby-Doo frightened you?
I was very scared of Scooby-Doo when I was 2 years old.
Oh, my gosh. Well, let me tell you something. If you were to come through this airport now, then you would understand. Yes, it's the world's busiest airport because the human traffic is incredible. All right, let's get to the baseball from yesterday. The Phillies announced that manager Gabe Kapler has been fired after two seasons. We talked about how general manager Matt Klentak was very supportive of Kapler, but in the end it comes down to what John Middleton wanted. What I've been told internally is that they've talked about experienced managers, whether that be a Buck Showalter, whether that be a Joe Girardi. Maybe Joe Madden came up in the conversation, and we'll be talking about all that with Carl Ravitch coming up. It was the workout day in advance of the National League Championship Series. Ryan Zimmerman, the Nationals' first baseman, did a phone conference call as the Nationals made their way back from that series in Los Angeles, and he talked about the influence of Washington manager Dave Martinez.
I've had a lot of managers, obviously, and they all come into spring training and say, you know, they're going to stay this way no matter what. You know, we're going to be here for you. It's going to be us. You know, we don't care what anyone says. And then as soon as stuff goes bad, every manager has pretty much kind of thrown that out the window and sort of gone into self-preservation mode, where Davey honestly has stayed the same way. He's positive every day. His energy, he always trusts his players and has his players' backs. Even when we started as poorly as we did, he stayed the same.
Anibal Sanchez will start game one for the Nationals, and he talked about that.
My whole career, every game is different. Every situation is totally different. The game that I have against the Dodgers, you know, I think I put like a really good game plan with Sook. So it's helped a lot. But tomorrow is going to be a different day, different crowd, different team. I don't did my homework. But, you know, I start today, prepare my game for tomorrow. And let's see how's my game plan for tomorrow. And hopefully just, you know, just like quality stuff for the team.
He'll be pitching against Miles Michaelis in game one. We talked yesterday about that viral video that came out of the Cardinals clubhouse in their celebration after beating the Atlanta Braves, in which Mike Schilt basically pumped up his players, talking about how the Braves started some stuff and how the Cardinals finished. Well, Mike Schilt apologized for that. Here's what he told reporters on Thursday.
So I just wanted to address some of the post-game comments I made yesterday. You know, the clubhouse is a sanctuary that is very sacred. It's a private opportunity for us to be able to enjoy and celebrate. And you know, yesterday I got a great opportunity to have a moment with our team that is private, should have been private, and make sure they knew how proud of the accomplishments they have and moving forward to our staff and our players. You know, I apologize if my language offended anyone. It's not something I like to represent. It's not to be excused. It's supposed to be a private moment. But I will say that I'm flawed. I have my moments. You know, I grew up in a clubhouse, and you know, one of the crosses I bear is my language. So I've done a nice job over the many years of curbing that and trying to represent always this organization and myself in a positive light with class and dignity. I feel like I've always done that. It's regretful that was able to get out. I will not apologize for having passion about how I feel about our team and the accomplishments of our team. You know, so I just want to get that out there. It's not anything I want to talk about moving forward. We got baseball to play. You know, and as far as Randy goes, you know, completely give Randy grace for, you know, he was just excited. He's a great kid with a great heart. And like I said, grace moving forward for him.
I feel bad for Mike Schilt, Troy, that he had to apologize for that, but I loved what he said right there. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree that I do feel bad because, again, that is a private moment, like you said. But I'm surprised that he gave the player who leaked the video, you know, I don't know what happened internally, but I would feel like, you know, that's a team violation of some sort, right?
Sure, and he probably, you know, he got to talking to him, sure. He was chastised, but you got to move on, right? It's just a young player misusing social media. How often do we see that?
It does happen a lot, unfortunately. These dumb millennials these days, Buster. What are they doing?
Yeah, I didn't say that. You said that. All right, let's get to the game of the day.
Deep center field. The game. It's gone! Of the day.
The game of the day, of course, was in Houston with the Yankees waiting to begin the American League Championship Series. They had to see who won Game 5 between the Astros and the Rays on Thursday night. You had Garrett Cole on the mound for the Astros, and you had Tyler Glasnow on the mound for the Rays, and right away, the Astros jumped on Glasnow.
The pitch to Altuve. He swings and lines one into right center field. That's going to be a third straight hit. Hustling over to cut it off is Garcia. He does. In to score is Springer. Around the third, Brantley. Altuve is aboard. Three straight hits for Houston to start the first inning, and they have taken a 1-0 lead.
Dave Fleming on ESPN Radio, and that rally would continue.
1-0 Houston. Here's the pitch. Bregman lines this one toward the gap in right center field. That's going to get down. 1, 2, 3 hops up against the wall. In to score Brantley. Right behind him, Altuve. He'll score.
All right, so after Bregman's hit, I don't know if you felt this way, Troy, because you played the game. I thought, okay, they've got something on him because it was a breaking ball and Bregman was on it. It was like he was absolutely anticipating it. And after the game, we learned more about that. But did you have a sense early in that game that, yeah, they were on something with Tyler?
As I was watching this happen, I was like, oh no, please not be the first inning of the Cardinals Braves all over again. I can't go through that again.
So you were thinking about what time you were going to bed versus the strategy of the game, right?
No, I mean, I can't say that I watched the game closely enough to be on to tipping pitches. I would never be able to point that thing out during a game.
Okay. Well, the rally continued.
Infield still in for the Rays. The 0-1 pitch is a curve grounded past the dive of Wendell into left field. Another Astros hit. Bregman will score. And Yuli Gurriel takes advantage of that drawn-in infield. 4-0 Houston in the first inning.
And as Alex Bregman scored, he stopped and talked to Carlos Correa, kind of pointing out, it seemingly, what the pitcher was doing. Fox cameras caught that. The Astros were on to him. And, in fact, after the half inning, Glasnow went back into the clubhouse to check the video because he was wondering if he was tipping pitches. As the Rays came to the plate the next half inning against Garrett Cole, they struck back.
4-0 Houston, inning number 2. Eric Stogard drives one to deep right field against Garrett Cole. This one is gone. Well, I think it was a good decision to put Eric Stogard in the lineup for the Rays. He launches a home run against the ace of all aces, and maybe that one swing can help the Rays feel like this game isn't over. It's 4-1 Houston.
Dave Fleming on ESPN Radio, but you know what? That moment was an outlier because Garrett Cole dominated. He rolled through the middle innings. He pitched into the eighth inning, and here's what happened.
Another 1-2 pitch. Kiermaier strikes out swinging. On the curveball, there's number 10 for Garrett Cole. 2 down in the eighth inning.
And Cole would finish the eighth inning and turn it over to Roberto Osuna for the final outs.
1-2 to count. Osuna pitches. Choi strikes out swinging. And the Houston Astros have survived a great test and a terrific challenge from the Tampa Bay Rays. And they advance to their third straight American League Championship Series. And we are going to get a showdown of two powerhouse teams. The Yankees and the Astros will meet as the Astros celebrate on the field. Final score 6-1 as they advance and end the season for the Tampa Bay Rays. What a win and what a series.
And after the game, Garrett Cole talked with Stefano Pissarro.
Garrett, another outstanding performance. You guys are moving on to the ALCS. Just talk to me about your emotions right now.
I mean, just elated. It was just a really hard-fought series. I mean, a lot of credit to the Rays. They had an unbelievable season. They put up an unbelievable fight, really challenged us. Fortunately, we were able to take the lead early and play really outstanding defense and then finish it off with a couple homers. So just an outstanding series and just, you know, elated for the fans. I mean, they just have had such a great time and they've had such great support for us. So
I know how you usually answer these questions, but, man, you were absolutely dominant, two straight starts. Just how were you able to just bring everything together and have these kind of dominant performances in such a big game?
Yeah, I mean, we just prepared really, really well. I had the catching core was on top of their game. I mean, like I said, it was a dogfight for five games, really. And then, you know, we finished it off with some unbelievable defense and some really clutch hitting. So, you know, it's like I said, we were tested and we responded well. We had to get hit in the face twice. So I like the way that we answered the bell, and looking forward to the next series.
You mentioned the dogfight. You mentioned the next series. That's what you're expecting against the Yankees, right?
Yeah, I mean, great team, unbelievable season, boatload of talent. And they've had a few days off, so they're going to be fresh.
Congratulations, man. Good luck.
Thank you.
Astros manager A.J. Hinch talked about Gerrit Cole.
We got Gerrit Cole. That in itself, coming to the ballpark, gives us great vibe that we're going to have an opportunity to win. We know he's going to come out hot, get his strikeouts. We know he's going to set a tone. He's intense. There's no mistaking him and what his priority is, which is to get deep into the game and give us a chance to win. And he's done that as much as anybody in baseball.
Rays manager Kevin Cash talked about that ugly first inning.
Yeah, I think they had a really good approach. It happened quick. Just really didn't allow him to settle in. And that's what their offense is capable of doing. We've done such a good job, I felt, leading into Game 5 of kind of controlling the early top of their lineup. You know they're going to get their hits. Every once in a while they're going to get the home runs, but they just pieced together a tremendous inning against a really good pitcher.
And he talked about Gerrit Cole.
It is frustrating. I mean, look, at getting down, we've been down, we've shown the ability to come back. The frustrating part is that Gerrit Cole's on the mound on the other side, and the run he's been on is second to none. So that presents its own challenges, but still had the confidence that we were going to be able to kind of hold it right there. Wasn't quite sure how we were going to get to him. We needed some things to go our way and catch a pitch out front that we could do some damage on with some guys on base. He just never allowed that to happen.
Glass now talked about tipping his pitches.
I went back and looked, and it was pretty obvious as far as the tips go. But again, like, I'm not going to say that's the reason why. Like, I left some pitches that were there to hit, like over the middle of the plate. And they're really good hitters, and they can do things with. I don't care how hard you throw, they're good hitters. So I don't know if that's what it was, but when I look back, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, when he was from the set position, he would hold his glove lower when he was going to throw a curveball and higher when he was going to throw a fastball, and seemingly that's what the Astros picked up on. Astros third baseman Alex Bregman talked about facing the Yankees.
It's very similar to our team. Both teams were a little banged up during the year, persevered until we got to the ALCS and we get a matchup with them again. I mean, it was an unbelievable series that we had with them during the regular season. It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be a blast. I'll tell you this, I love Minute Maid Park when it's like this. It's incredible. From the first pitch to the last, I think some people, I know my mom was standing the entire game.
Astros-Yankees, it'll certainly be an interesting series. Can't wait for that one. We'll talk about it with Carl Ravitch, but before we get there, we all know that hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BUSTER. ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And I personally do love my morning coffee, so I'm very excited about this new hire. Let's get to Carl Ravitch.
All aboard, it's the Ravitch Train with Carl Ravitch.
That's right, Carl Ravitch, the host of Baseball Tonight, and of course, play-by-play man for ESPN. And the Ravitch Train knows this, trying to find a quiet corner in the world's busiest airport to tape a podcast. Not easy, Carl. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I can hear the sort of the subdued Buster voice. We must be in an airport. I'm good. Let's roll it. You're fine. We'll kill it.
All right. Let's start with last night. Tell me, as you're watching that, for me, it was when Alex Bregman hit that breaking ball and slapped it into right field. You're like, okay, they're on to something here with Tyler Glass now. An advantage that the Astros exploited early. He was tipping pitches, and they jumped all over it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, maybe I'm not as observant as everybody else. The idea that they squared up all those pitches, it wasn't until Bregman stopped with his with Correa and basically told him, and the camera had the great shot of it, that you realize, like, well, now they clearly have a feeling for what he's doing, and everybody in their mother seemed to recognize that the glove was down on curveballs and up on fastballs. And that's what good teams do. The great part about this upcoming series is you got two teams that are very aware of all that stuff, and the Yankees will do everything they can to pick up on that, and the Astros do the same thing. So that's sort of where I went with it, is now moving forward, how they all deal with it.
Yeah, so tell me what you're looking forward to in this matchup of superpowers in the American League Championship Series, which I think we all look forward to.
Yeah, no doubt. And everything, you know, to me, everything went the Yankees' way with the way this pitching lines up. But again, I still think that the Astros are a more complete team. I think the AL East showed how difficult it is to navigate through that. The Yankees were the best team in that division. I think the Rays, the way they played in the postseason, we kind of reminded everybody of that. I give a very slight edge to the Astros. I think the two series showed, you know, how good the Yankees are and some vulnerability from the Astros, which I think allows it to be a more competitive perceived series in the minds of most people. I thought it would be. But I think the fact that the Astros were pushed to five is indicative of the idea that this feels six or seven games, and it can go either way. It really can.
Well, and from the Yankees' perspective, I think you better take control of this series early, because going into games one and two, you know, three, four, they have the advantage in terms of being rested, in terms of having their bullpen all lined up, in terms of having their rotation lined up. But they better take advantage of that, Carl, because you look ahead to how this could play out. If you are the Yankees, the scenario you don't want is to be trailing going into a game six when you got a Verlander lined up and then you got a Garrett Cole in game seven. So to me, like, if the Yankees are going to take this series, they better grab it by the throat early.
They have to steal one. I mean, they have a chance, but they've got to steal one of these two. I don't think there's any doubt about that. For people that don't watch a ton of Astros baseball, I was watching with a few people last night, and you just sort of go through this lineup and you realize, like, oh my gosh, now that guy's coming up. Oh goodness, now that guy's coming up. Look at who they have hitting seventh and eighth in that lineup. And the Yankees, you've said that about all year because they've had one of the best lineups in baseball, but boy, the Astros are so formidable with such good power pitching. And maybe this is the year where a guy like Cole carries them. Maybe that is the year, and you know, I think everybody's a little down on Verlander because he pitched in relief, and let's not forget he's likely to win the Cy Young, so that's it may just be the difference between Cole and everybody else. Cole and Verlander.
How good is Cole in your mind? Because watching that last night, I was trying to think back to pitchers who had stuff of that quality, and it's a short list when you think about, you know, for me, a Randy Johnson back in the 80s, Mike Scott had that sort of dominance in the postseason, just beating teams with pure stuff because it looked like the Rays had no chance.
Yeah, Pedro, I mean, that's how dominant it looked because of the power. I mean, you know, Pedro vintage had power. Cole pitches with power. He pitches up with power. And unless you steal the pitches like Altuve was doing, you're not hitting that ball. That's crazy. So that's who I think of when I see him, and he's just in such control, you know, and his breaking pitches are phenomenal. And that's where I couldn't have timed out better for a dude that's going to be a free agent. I mean, that really worked out well, and it's ironic in some degrees he's going to face a team that may very well be bidding on him.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, the expression on his face after the game when he was brought up, the fact that he's now pitching against the Yankees, is really funny. He got that big grin on his face. How much of an advantage do you think it is that the Yankees have had a few days off going into this series? Because I do think it's something. Hembo sent out the note a couple hours ago that the Yankees in the American League Division Series threw about 300 fewer pitches in the series that they faced versus what the Astros had to do.
the difference between those two teams in the end is going to be the, you know, the bullpen and just how I think Aaron Boone showed us in that series against the Twins how quickly he's going to his pen and how fast he's taking guys out. The sort of lesson learned from last year is to not hesitate. And whether it's Dave Roberts or Grady Little or Joe Maddon, we're making moves and we're making them quick. And there's a decisiveness about it. I'm not too concerned about the number of pitches that they threw. I think Severino looked good. I think Paxton, they have confidence in. Tanaka's been great in the postseason. But ultimately, this is when you get into the Yankee bullpen, how effective are they? And I think the challenge for them is the Astro offense, in spite of how good the bullpen can be in a seven-game series, at some point you got to believe they're going to hit them, right? I mean, at some point they're going to get to the bullpen in one of those games, if not two of them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I talked with an executive last night who said that he thought, that what could happen, depending on how well the Yankees hitters extend the Houston starters, is whether or not the Astros bullpen would be exposed. Pick a guy in this series, Carl, you feel like is a big X factor, because my guy is Adam Ottavino. It was clear that in the way that Aaron Boone used him against the Twins, he's picking out the best right-handed hitter in the other lineup in big spots, and he's going after him. And Ottavino got Nelson Cruz twice, and he walked in twice. And in this series, he's going to get, an Alex Bregman. He's going to get an Altuve. He's going to get a George Springer in a big spot. Who's a guy for you that you're going to be watching?
Well, I'm going to say that in order for the Astros to win, they need great starts from Verlander and Cole. And just given what we saw from Verlander at his last start, it kind of feels like when you watch the Dodgers give up the lead to the Nats, all of a sudden everybody started to think, maybe the Rays can beat the Astros, and then they couldn't. Verlander is the X factor for me, because I do believe that Cole is a given. I think the way he's pitching, you know what you're going to get. And I think I now have a little bit of suspicion about what Verlander is going to do. And there's just, for some reason, there's something in me that says the Yankees are not going to be bothered by Verlander as much as they're going to be by Cole. And I think if Verlander's great, the Yankees will lose the series. I think if Verlander struggles a little bit, that the Yankees can win the series. So Verlander is.
All right, National League Championship Series starts today. The Nationals and the Cardinals, would you agree with me? Whoever comes out of this series, they're going to be the underdog in the World Series.
I don't think there's no doubt about that. But I think we all knew in the beginning of the year that the Nationals had a chance because of their great pitching. I think Corbin learned something in the division series that when we saw him in relief, he was different. So the Nats scare me an awful lot more than the Cardinals. And yet there's a lot of people in St. Louis will tell you this is the type of Cardinal team that goes and wins championships. And I think we've seen that before, too, where there's not necessarily one superstar player. It's still the same pitchers. Molina's still there. Ozuna can get hot. But there's a scary aspect to the Cardinals we've seen before when it comes to winning World Series. But, gosh, Adam Wainwright's a friend to some degree. I don't consider what he did the other night to be able to be repeated against the Nats. And the weakness about the Nats is it felt like going into that game last night, the other night, if you got Rendon and Soto out, you won the game. You could win. That the depth of that lineup wasn't deep enough that they were going to beat you. And then all of a sudden Kendrick, with his three errors, shows up and hits a grand slam.
So tell me who in this series you're watching is an X factor, because for me, no question, it's Carlos Martinez, who I think at some point Mike Schilt is going to have to make the decision about whether or not he's going to finish up games with him, because he got hit around. And, man, you assume in big spots he's going to be looking for him to get out a Rendon and get out a Juan Soto, and those guys are so locked in right now. I don't like that matchup for the Cardinals.
I like nothing about the matchup. I like nothing about when he comes in. And the sad part about watching that Dodgers series is I had said during the day, if Kershaw comes in this game five, I think the Dodgers lose. And it had nothing to do with Kershaw's ability to pitch, especially as a starter. When he starts, I figure they're going to win. When he goes in relief, I have a real bad feeling about what's going to happen. And it did. I have a terrible feeling about Carlos Martinez in the LCS. I would do my level best to get him in a low leverage situation. Hopefully you get a 2 or 3 run lead and let him pitch and get through that, as opposed to the first time you bring him in, you're trying to protect a 1-run lead. That would scare the heck out of me.
All right. Who you got in this series?
I have the Nats in this series. In spite of home field advantage for the Cardinals, I have the Nationals. I think that there's just – I think the fact that they won their first game, I think the fact that Scherzer is going to be okay and on rest. I think Corbin did learn something in that division series. I think Strasburg is pitching with a lot more confidence than he has over his career, and that he's looked at now as the equal of Scherzer, or if not the guy in that rotation. I have the Nats, and I think Turner actually does a little more to get on base and start showing his speed, because he was kind of a non-factor in the division series. So I like the lineup a little bit better, and I like the pitching a lot better.
I totally agree with you, but of course I have no credibility because they picked the Braves to come through the National League at this point, and that side of my bracket get completely wiped out. Last night we got a note from our news editors at ESPN, and they asked us to match the reporting that Dave Roberts is going to continue as the Dodgers manager. I got to tell you, when I got the note, I was like, there's no story here. The only indication that he was ever going to lose his job was media speculation. And so I checked into it. I know our Alden Gonzalez checked into it. It was never discussed in the Dodger organization. What was your take on that, Carl, and the perception of how Dave Roberts managed that last game? Because I said in the podcast yesterday, look, we knew all year that this part of the Dodger team potentially was going to be a problem in a big spot, and that's exactly what happened. He didn't have great weapons to deal with that spot, and they lost.
I think you overlook, when something like that happens, how good he has been and how important he is to them. I do think that when Joe Maddon is out there, when Girardi is out there, when Showalter is out there, when you've lost two World Series and didn't get back to one and you won 106 games, I think it goes to the idea that a couple of years ago we saw three playoff managers get fired, that there really are no rules anymore. And I think that's more about the way that we operate in baseball, as opposed to Dave Roberts or the perception of him or what he's capable of. I just think we are so exposed to, in a sense, what have you done for me lately, as opposed to we signed you to a four-year deal and you're comfortable. We use managers like dish towels. You discard them when you feel like there's no ability to absorb anymore, and that's not fair to them. I don't agree with the way they do it, but I think a lot of that conversation had to do with what we've seen in recent years, that guys who have job security, who take teams to playoffs, get fired the same in that offseason. So, you know, in a lot of ways, what we once took as for granted, we no longer can, and that's where I think that conversation piece comes from, plus the idea that Joe Maddon is out there. I think that is a changer.
Speaking of disposable, the Phillies fired their manager, Gabe Kapler, yesterday. I would imagine that they're going to wind up with an experienced guy. As we sit here today, I think that the choice is going to come down to Buck Showalter or Joe Girardi. Joe Maddon, I think his preference is to go to the Angels if the Angels want him. I think that's one of the dominoes that's going to fall. What's your read on this situation, Carl? And if you're sitting in the shoes of John Middleton, the Phillies owner, which guy, Girardi, Showalter, really interests you?
Well, they both do. I think I'm partial probably to Buck Showalter because of my relationship with him. However, I think in a lot of ways Girardi is like Showalter, in that the criticism of both was that they were very uptight, they were very hands-on, they weren't amenable to listening to other people, analytics, blah, blah, blah. I think Showalter has clearly shown, if you buy that, which I don't, but if you buy that he's changed. And I think that when you watch Joe on television, he has shown that he has changed. And I think that both of these guys are accepting of sort of the new way of doing things, and they both have similar appeal to me. But because I've sat next to and observed Buck on a different level than Joe, I think he'd be great. And I think Middleton's propensity and McPhail's propensity for experience, Charlie Manuel's coming back, what we tried didn't work, let's go back to the tried and true of people who have been in the sort of the battles, who operate in New York and won in New York. And Buck seems like the right guy for me in Philadelphia.
And I got to tell you, if I were sitting down with Girardi, that you mentioned what happened in the past, that would be my first question to him if I were sitting in John Middleton's shoes. Hey, After you got fired by the Yankees, it came out that the communication with the players wasn't the best. The players respected you as a person. They respected your baseball knowledge, but there wasn't really a connection there. What did you learn from that? Does that make sense?
Absolutely, 100%. 100%. And I think, you know, we in the media and the teams that have won lately, A.J. Hinch, Alex Cora, Boone, Rocco Baldelli, it seems to be a priority. Dave Roberts, your ability to communicate with your players is paramount to their success. And I think that if you don't recognize that, you're blind. And I think he's, you know, one thing about him is he's pretty sharp. He's not going to ignore that. He has to pay attention to it. And that's, to me, an easy answer for him.
All right, Ravi, good to talk with you. Thanks for jumping on.
Fly carefully.
Bleacher Tweets.
Rena Wong is a Twins fan who's known on Twitter as Rena Benina, and she helps us out every Friday with the Bleacher Tweets, even on a Friday after the Twins were eliminated. Rena, how you holding up after that?
I'm good now. I've had a couple days to recover. Tuesday, I'm not going to lie, was really, really sad, really difficult. But I wanted to address one of your tweets. I can confirm that Twins fans were doing the mass exodus in the seventh inning. That is correct, including my family who listens to this podcast, and I will call them out for it. But, yeah, I mean, it was a really, 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 really tough way to end the season. But I think that a lot of the players are already back at it and ready, you know, to go for 2020. And so I'm really excited to see who they sign, kind of the direction the team goes to. And I think it'll be a good decade. It's been a rough decade.
Yeah, for context, so like during the seventh inning, I was working that game on ESPN Radio, and at the end of the seventh inning, I think the score was 3-0, but of course the Twins had been dominated in the series by the Yankees to that point. And so the seventh inning ends, and I look up, and there is a stream of fans who are headed out, and Dan Shulman doing play-by-play, and Chris Singleton and I all look at it and go, wow, look at that, look at all the folks who are leaving, and you know, there were certainly reams of empty seats after that, and there were Twins fans who really were bothered by that tweet, like, no, we're not leaving. We support our team all the way through. Yes?
Yeah, no, it's true, but we were leaving. And by the ninth inning, and I did say for the entire game, my section was pretty much empty. It was me, maybe a handful of Twins fans, and a bunch of Yankees fans. So, yeah, Twins fans, next year we can do better. We can stay the extra 45 minutes for the last two innings.
Yeah, although I must say, man, the way that series played out, the Yankees played so well. And I think the big surprise was the Twins offense and how it wasn't as productive as it had been during the year. All right, as we move forward, tonight we got the start of the National League Championship Series. You've got the Cardinals playing host to the Nationals. What's your prediction on that series?
I pick the Nationals because I think that they're going to outpitch St. Louis, even though both of them have really rocky bullpens, and we've seen a lot of their starters even struggle here and there. But for the most part, I think Scherzer and Strasburg, they've got it in the bag.
And Troy, I want you to jump in here. I haven't heard from you on your prediction on this series.
Ah, man. I think the Cardinals are going to win, honestly.
I
think the Nationals are going to be really more exhausted from their series than the Cardinals are from their series.
Yeah, we're going to have to get Marley Rivera on next week so she can brag, because she was the one team that picked one person that I saw who picked the Cardinals to go to the World Series. All right, for the American League Championship Series, Rena, you just saw the Yankees in person, and you saw what the Astros did last night against the Rays. What's your pick in that series?
I really had to sit down and think about this one because the Yankees did shut us down, but I don't think it's necessarily due to the fact that they have the most dominant pitching. I think that for the most part, the Twins played really, really poorly, and that definitely aided in the Yankees sweeping the Twins. So with that said, I'm going to pick the Astros because I don't see anyone getting past the wall that's Gerrit Cole and a well-rested Justin Verlander. And I can see the Yankees taking, you know, a game here or there, but the Astros pitching, it just feels like you're running into a brick wall over and over and over again. You see the wall coming, but there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I'm picking the Astros, too. I do feel like if the Yankees are going to win this series, they better take advantage of the layoff and all their rest as we begin this series and take three of the first four games and give themselves maybe three chances to win that final game. Troy, what you got?
Yeah, I agree with exactly what Rena said. Give me the Astros. Pitching is too good, and their hitting is just too good, as Carl was saying. Give me the Astros.
All right. All right, let's get to this week's sweeps, Rena.
Absolutely. Kicking it off, we've got Jeff Durdenty at Jeff Durdenty. We've got the two behemoths in the ALCS and two upsets in the NL. MLB seems willing to experiment. Do you ever see a time in the future where the final four are reseeded?
No, I don't think so, because I think they, as much as they've sort of chipped away at the walls between the American League and the National League with interleague play, in order to reseed, you, of course, would have to put them all into the same grouping, and I don't think they'll ever do that. I think you'll always have the American League champion going against the National League champion.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the logistics just wouldn't quite work out there. Next, we've got John Paul Upton at Sky Blue Giant. Are underage players like Juan Soto allowed to take part in a clubhouse champagne celebration? Or do they have to look on forlornly as their teammates go off? Although, he wants to add, Soto does turn 21 during the World Series.
Yeah, that's the one time I can remember where there was a specific, sort of window or a safe zone put around drinking in a celebration was when I was covering the Yankees, and Daryl Strawberry was a recovering alcoholic, and he'd gone through some treatments. The Yankees were very careful not to kind of be, right in Straw's face with a celebration. But when it comes to young players, Rena, I think the drinking age is 21. Do you think any drinking goes on at colleges under 21 years old?
No, absolutely not. Everyone has their first sip of alcohol on their 21st birthday.
There you go, Troy. Yeah, right, exactly. Troy, what do you think?
I'd also like to throw out, you mentioned Strawberry. The Rangers had to do a very similar thing with Josh Hamilton. They were very, very weary of their celebrations, and I think they actually nixed the alcohol celebration altogether for one of their celebrations.
Yeah, but you know that in some back room someplace, someone's having a drink of something.
Oh, yeah,
okay?
I'm sure.
We knew that, and it was the same thing with the Yankees. But, yeah, I think if Juan Soto wanted to have a drink, I think he probably would have been able to have one.
Absolutely, yeah, and I like that idea better than, shipping them off to McDonald's or something like that.
By the way,
right, exactly.
As the producer of this podcast, I must say we do not condone underage drinking.
Right, and as a father of a 20-year-old at college, I would agree with you.
Yes, and again, with my parents listening, I did not drink until I was 21.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning. A lot of discussion around the Dodgers is naturally about Kershaw's playoff narrative, but what about Bellinger's playoff narrative? Once again, he struggles hitting with 7 strikeouts compared to 2 walks, 4 hits, no RBIs, and a 549 OPS in the series.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Look, he struggled down the stretch, too. There were times in September that he looked lost. He had a few good games, but I'm sure that's going to gnaw on him again, because that's what drove him to make a lot of the changes that he did with his swing in the last offseason were his struggles in the postseason. So we'll find out probably during the course of wintertime the work that Cody's doing trying to plug those holes that emerged yet again.
Absolutely. Next, we've got Jeremy T. at Jeremy Tiramini. In light of the Dodgers' collapse and because of their bullpen struggles all season, how many relief pitchers will the Dodgers sign this offseason? I say 3, including overpaying for Dellin Betances.
I don't think they'll react in that way, because first off, the Dodgers, Andrew Friedman, he's not a reactionary executive. We know this because Dave Roberts is still his manager, despite all of the drumbeat from the media that Roberts' job is in trouble. We know that that's not the case. And I think Andrew is going to look at his stable of pitching, between Dustin May and Gonsolin and other guys that he has, and he'll feel like going into next year that he's got an array of options. The one thing I'm curious about is, what will Kenley Jansen's standing as closer be going into next year? And Dellin Betances, we mentioned, he's going to be a good one-year bet for somebody as he comes back from this injury, Achilles injury.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't really see them overpaying for a guy that overshadows Kenley per se, but I'm interested to see how they maneuver him in the lineup and, you know, what inning he comes out in next year. And instead, I can see them maybe getting a couple Joe Kelly replacement spots. So next, we've had a lot of similar questions after last night's game, but this one was submitted first. So we've got Red River Baseball at Red River Baseball. Hey, Buster, MLB should name the proposed new three-batter rule for pitchers the Kevin Cash rule. MLB had to be cringing watching him do in Game 5 exactly what they're trying to do away with. It was excruciating to watch. What do you think?
Yeah, it was. And you talk to Rays people privately, and they acknowledge that. Now, this is the Rays' best opportunity to win. And Kevin Cash, you know, last 2 years has managed his butt off. And he's become an expert at this style of managing. But privately, people around baseball don't like this style. They don't like to see the parade of relievers and all the stops and starts to the action during the course of the game. I think Kevin Cash, knowing his sense of humor, he'd be honored to have the rule named after him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Troy was asleep at this time, but, I mean, in the eighth inning during all the pitching changes, people were booing, people at the game, and I'm sure people behind the screens were booing as well. It really was excruciating to watch.
Rena, I don't appreciate that. I actually was up
wow.
the entire game. I heard
no
every,
way.
I watched
really?
The first
no
half
way.
Of the game. I listened to the second half of the game. So to all the people doubting me, I saw the whole game.
Very
did you
nice.
Plans last night with, you know, a friend?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I may have gone out to dinner with someone and still, you know, been awake because of the high that provided.
Wow.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Now, there's a tease for next week's podcast. Very nice.
We'll see.
Yeah, keep us posted. Lastly, we've got Eric-y at Esoteric Eric Zero. Hey, guys, if you were tasked with casting a baseball sitcom with four of your favorite baseball personalities of all time, which four would you pick?
All right, this is a fun question. I love this question. And Rena, I definitely want to get your four on this. You have to have Babe Ruth, right? Because the garrulous personality that he had, how loud he was, how famous he was, he would have to be in the mix. For me, because I covered him and I knew how much fun he had, I think Tony Gwynn would be an absolute blast to be around. David Ortiz of the Red Sox. I mean, we saw him again on the Fox pregame show. He has so much fun and he responds well to other people. That would be that would be cool. And Ted Williams. Because Ted Williams was so acerbic, and you hear the stories of him just ripping into teammates. That four right there, besides the fact that they're all great players, all great hitters, that would be a fun group. What's your group of four?
No, I like that group. I would watch. It'd probably get at least a 70% on Rotten Tomatoes, but I would keep Babe and David Ortiz. I think that those two they're a must. I mean, if they're not in your sitcom, why bother having a sitcom? But my last two, first would be Yogi Berra, because you need some iconic sitcom quotes. Yeah, and I think that, you know, he can come up with things that you can slap on a mug or other merchandise that, you know, people would like, and it would really drive the show. And my last pick is actually going to be Nick Swisher. You need a goofy heartthrob on that show. Yeah, and he's funny. He's, you know, dabbled in TV before, and he was funny on TV. And I think that, you know, he's kind of a guy that's a little out of left field, would bring that entertaining value and really drive in some of the younger fans. So that's my four.
Troy, before I bring you in here, I got to say, a guy who's proven in the sitcom realm that I didn't mention, who is, of course, baseball ties, he was a catcher, would be Bob Uecker. He would be a really good one to throw into a mix of those three. Okay, who are you going to say?
So I have my list here, Rena. I agree with two of you. I've got Yogi, and I have Nick Swisher. And I also added Tommy Lasorda and Lou Piniella. I'm going the all-comedy show here.
Yeah, so but by putting Lasorda and Piniella on there, that would mean we would have to be on cable. We couldn't be on network television.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Oh man,
yeah,
we'll I love that question.
Bravo or something.
Exactly. Yeah, it would be the real baseball house husbands of Major League Baseball or something like that.
Good try.
We'd have to come up with a good title. I know it was bad. I was trying to go somewhere and I was unsuccessful. You got any ideas for a show title, Rena?
That's what I would honestly go with, like the Real House Husbands of, I don't know, like some city.
Dodger Stadium.
Dodger Stadium. Perfect. Love it.
There we go. All right, Rena. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
All right. That's it for today, and that's it for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody, and my thanks to Rena and to Carl. Have a great day, everybody, and enjoy the baseball over the weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.